This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, Matt Jolly here from WarbirdRadio.com, here to tell you about our new on-demand programming. Listen, we know your life's busy and you want to listen to your favorite shows when you have the time, not when they're being broadcast. Well, thanks to our new on-demand format, you can do just that. Just click on the on-demand button on the right side of WarbirdRadio.com and follow the simple instructions for setting up your favorite listening device. If you prefer to listen directly from WarbirdRadio.com, well, just click the Play Now button at the bottom of the show story. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy our new on-demand programming.
Hi, everybody. Join me, Nick Bezos, Smithsonian Curator, for Preserving Our Past, a lively look at air and space museums across the country. WarbirdRadio.com proudly presents our newest on-demand broadcast, Preserving Our Past, where museum experts share their thoughts and experiences for future generations of air and space museum lovers.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
We've got your six. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in.
Take off.
Hello and welcome to the latest installment of the Wix Warbird Show here on WarbirdRadio.com. This is episode number 86, believe it or not. Been on the air for a couple of years here, doing lots of shows, talking to a bunch of interesting people, and this is our latest episode. We're coming to you on Wednesday, September 12, 2012. I'm your host, Zane Adams, from deep in the heart of Texas. It's fall is coming. Warbird and air show season is part two, is right around the corner here in Texas. And we've got a lot of great things coming up in the next month or so. I know if you in the south, the air shows kick off again after the weather starts to cool off a little. And we've got, I guess, 4 weekends in October with air shows here in Texas. We've got air shows here in Fort Worth, over in Midland, over in El Paso, down in Houston, all over the place, plus a few fly-ins and other things. So if you live in the South, live in Texas for sure, get out in this next month or so and go see some warbirds in the air. They are flying in a town near you at an air show near you. So get out there and see them. Support your warbirds. And support the men and women that that fly and maintain these airplanes. And it's always great fun. There's nothing like a round motor or an inline motor if you're one of those P-51 types, you know, out there. But this is always, it's always good fun to hear and see those airplanes. So get out and see the airplanes when you can. Tonight we've got a little bit something different. We're not exactly warbirds tonight. It is warbird, but not by the strict definition that we go by here. But the warbirds we're talking about tonight are active duty airplanes. I had the opportunity to go visit with the 47th Fighter Squadron at in Barksdale Air Force Base in Shreveport, Louisiana last weekend. I got to meet with some great people and got some interviews coming up here. And I've got want to thank, first off, the Public Affairs Office from the 307th Bomb Wing, which is the 47th is under there at Barksdale. Jessica DiRizio, Staff Sergeant Daigle, and Master Sergeant Steele, Staff Sergeant Daigle and Master Sergeant Steele escorted me around, allowed me to go and photograph and take a little video and interview the folks down there. Got a couple of neat interviews tonight, one with the commanding officer and one with a crew chief. And so we'll get on with those interviews. I hope you enjoy the interviews tonight, and we'll talk to you in a minute.
Lieutenant Colonel James Travis.
Yes.
The 47th Fighter Squadron, right. Barksdale Air Force Base. And I appreciate you having us here today. It's been a lot of fun. You guys have been took us out on the ramp. We got to see some of your guys skid and the guys take off and depart there. So that was good fun. But a little history of the squadron we're talking about here. You guys were the 47th was on Ford Island or not Wheeler Field. On Pearl Harbor Day, right?
We just got to see it there.
Yeah.
It's a little more overgrown than it was then, but yeah.
And then the squadron history, you go with air defense in New York, a little action out of Vietnam, out of Thailand, flying F-4s, from what I read, and then back here to Barksdale. And you're in, what, an A-37 squadron?
Yeah, when they did fighters, they transitioned through A-37s just before the A-10s here.
Okay, all right. And then you guys, you were saying you've been flying the A-10. Y'all started in the A-10A, correct?
Yeah, the universe had the A-10A for the longest time,
right.
And then we did the A-plus with the addition of the targeting pods and a little bit of data link.
Okay.
And subsequently, just recently, we did the C model, which substantively changed everything.
Yeah. And that's what you were saying here. And just up front, you guys are slated for or talked about being in part of the force reduction deal. And, you know, the administration and the Pentagon is looking at getting rid of some A-10 squadrons, and y'all are on the list, apparently. But... And I certainly hate for you guys to leave and to be bracked or whatever you want to call it there. But can you tell me a little bit about that process here up front, about what's going on in that and what we can do to help?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the question, and you're right on your basic content. And imagine what the squadron goes through when, really, we're on our layover to go to the AEF, and we're on our way to Afghanistan when that news breaks.
Yeah.
So credit to the squadron. Everybody... The first thing they thought about was, I am headed to combat, and my job is to go save Private Ryan on the end of some bridge and make his movie end right.
Right.
And I am, oh, whatever, that doesn't affect me yet. And they just say, laser eye vision on the mission and went to business. And that's, you know, where I was describing how many times, 7 to 8 times in a 5-hour sortie, you would have what's called a troops in contact situation, where someone is on the radio in dire need of help, and you're about... It's one of those stop what you're doing. They have a priority system in proximity, and they task the two ship that's closest. Sometimes a single ship. Sometimes you had to split, and you service one tick with one airplane and one with another. You know, you're hanging it out a little bit there with a little risk management and some careful decisions. But these guys had that mission in their mind, and so I'll say when it happened, of course we had heard the rumors, but it was a little bit of a shock that was handled magnificently by these. Cast of ruffians and hooligans.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of them for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But how this goes is we're execution agents of a plan. We don't build the plan. We report what we do and how well we do it. And we are just excellent at being, let's call it the equivalent of, I'm not a multi-purpose tool, okay?
Right.
We do combat search and rescue. We do forward air control. We do maritime air operations, which have just been highlighted recently, much to the Navy's chagrin. No, I say that. I say that in jest. They were. It was an excellent exercise.
And you're talking about RIMPAC in 2011, right?
Yeah. We just got back 2012.
Oh, okay.
And they just ran an outstanding exercise that we can go to later if you want. But so the capabilities of direct attack, troops in contact. Nobody can put a guns pass down within 65 odd meters without too much trauma.
Right.
Really? Under 100 meters, you're strafing. Good guys on the edge of the gun reticle where you're shooting at bad guys.
Yeah.
Nobody can do that. No, we're the only asset that's asked for by name.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that and the Preds. God bless them.
Yeah.
I'm just really.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
but the A-10 does the job.
Unique capabilities that, you know, you don't go build a house with a Leatherman tool, okay? Sometimes I've never seen a carpenter go out there and go, man, if I just had a Leatherman tool, I could do everything.
Yeah,
okay.
Right,
sometimes it does take a specialty tool. You do combat search and rescue. I've been night 1,500 feet in the rain, about 5 miles viz, working, you know, an issue that nobody can do that. Nobody can do that, especially with 1,100 rounds on board.
Yeah.
We've got instant Gatling justice for anybody who threatens a survivor. Nobody else can do that.
Yeah.
So I'm always just cautious anytime you see a... situation where we're willing to carve away a unique paid-for capability. I mean, we're a paid-for asset. The C model conversion's done. We've got a little bit of a wing and make it happy. You know, basic maintenance kind of stuff. We don't need a lot of big upgrades.
Right.
It's just okay.
Yeah.
So we really keep the engines wet and spinning. You know, keep the motors wet and the engines hot.
Yeah.
That kind of expense.
Sure.
So. When you talk about a bang for the buck, I really feel like we have huge combat power per dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And
the bad guys don't like you around. The bad guys know the sound of your gun and know the sound of your airplane, and they duck and hide when you come around, I imagine. So
funny you should say that. Yeah, the Iraqis had the Devil's Cross name for us, because when you roll up, it makes a big X in the sky. It looks very unique. And so then that cast her. But in Afghanistan, we would actually have to stay away. like, because as soon as we showed up, everything flitters away. So there was a, not to go too deep into tactics, but the idea is that when they know you're there, and that can stop a fight, just because you're there, that's powerful.
Yeah.
And that just says something about the airplane.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just making noise.
Right.
We're coming in there with, you know, 500 feet per second worth of airplane, 40,000 pounds, shooting 3,000 feet per second. And here's the projectile. Let me just hand that to you, and I want you to feel it. Yeah, that's the bullet that's coming out of the gun.
That's feel a chunk of steel. Yeah.
Okay? Just feel the heft.
What grain bullet is that?
Oh, we do it in pounds. We don't do it in grains. About a buck and a quarter, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, and it goes boom when it gets there. So
right.
It really is. And just let me here's the other competitor for aviation. There's a,
right, the
there's
little, a, the little a, 20
there's
millimeter
There's a 20 mil shell, and there's a 30 mil shell.
Right.
And, you know, I carry 1,100 of these things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you just got to think about. Now we're bringing out laser rockets that are actually precision-guided munitions. Imagine if you had 14 laser-guided long-stick rockets that you can put in a low collateral damage fight. Oh, that doesn't keep me from carrying the four JDAMs or two JDAMs with GBU-12s. So we can carry two laser-guided bombs, two GPS-guided bombs, and 14 precision weapons.
Right.
And then about five or six really good tactical pulls on the gun.
Yeah.
That's just one airplane.
Right.
We go in pairs. And so add up, you know, people say, well, how fast do you go? How much turn you go? Like, well, I've never impressed anybody with how fast I go, and I really don't care. It's how long can I stay?
Yeah.
And very often we would show up and we would have, you know, 45 minutes, an hour of on station time, and then we would yo-yo to the tanker, and so it's constant target coverage.
Yeah.
With
two
most
airplanes,
of the time
be
being
there
two
all day
airplanes.
Long.
My last sortie in theater was 5.5, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, 5.5, and we service like 7 ticks, one of them and empty the gun. I mean,
yeah.
Come on. Nobody does that but an A-10.
Right.
And that's why I'm proud of this airplane and this team of people.
It's a great airplane. I mean, it's been around since the 70s. It's, what, 19, first flight 72,
ours
I guess
are all,
delivered
ours
in
are all
75.
79 and 80
all,
tails.
Yeah, 79 and 80,
Ours tend to be the late 70s
and
early 80s.
And they're doing upgrades. Any of your airplanes had the wing upgrade? Or is that something that's pretty new?
It is pretty new. I couldn't give you a count.
Okay.
We just have I love that I don't have to worry about the airplanes. We have the most magnificent maintenance in the world. I mean, Barksdale jets are renowned for their quality, and that's another point of
code
pride.
Code one all the time, right?
You know, for the longest time, we wouldn't even have a ground aboard. I mean, it was just a guarantee. As times are trying, and then that's one of the things that a announcement of a force closure, a force structure change, or a unit closure will do. I mean, people have to look out for mama and the mortgage.
Sure.
And so people will make totally approved decisions for good family reasons on that they need to move to an opportunity in DM or an opportunity at Boise.
Right.
And so I understand that. And so it's a little harder on everybody right now to maintain any kind of a tempo. And that's why, you know, for good or bad, we like a good, solid, keep us kind of decision right away.
Sure.
Because then
sure.
It would allow normal family life, normal people's expectations of a JOB.
Right.
You know,
morale.
You gotta maintain
important.
That.
All important. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd say morale is hanging tough. It is.
It? Yeah.
But it's trying.
It's like in the back of your mind, kind of thing.
Yeah. I described to you the 2 years the squadron's been through between a wing split, a C model conversion, a combat coded conversion, just after our initial operation capability deployment. 100% successful all the way around.
Yeah.
To walk into a force structure change.
On the eve of going overseas.
So, and to come back and to maintain a constant even keel, no SIF casts, just didn't have the kinds of issues that you might have if people were acting distracted as opposed to just feeling distracted.
Right. And you're a reserve squad. Lieutenant Colonel Mark said, you're doing a full-time job on a part-time pay. So how much more economical would you get?
Very efficient. If you talk about the total cost of ownership of a reserve unit and the combat capability it delivers, it's really interesting math you got to try to do.
Well, that was our interview with Colonel Jim Travis, the 47th Fighter Squadron. Colonel Travis. Met us in his office there. It was most gracious, and you can tell he's excited about his men and women in the squadron, and they excited about the mission and doing all he can to keep them focused on their job. Well, you know, being under the threat of realignment or decommissioning of the unit, it's a tough job to do. And hats off to him. And I think he'll do well in the future. I just hope his squadron is held together and write your representatives and help them out there. If you live in Louisiana, they could really use it. So. Next up, we're going to have an interview with the crew chief, Sergeant John Slade, a really outstanding young man. And before we get to that, though, we're going to take a little commercial break here, and we'll be right back with more in a moment.
This is Warbird Radio.
Hi, Matt Jolly here from WarbirdRadio.com, here to tell you about our new on-demand programming. Listen, we know your life's busy and you want to listen to your favorite shows when you have the time, not when they're being broadcast. Well, thanks to our new on-demand format, you can do just that. Just click on the on-demand button on the right side of WarbirdRadio.com and follow the simple instructions for setting up your favorite listening device. If you prefer to listen directly from WarbirdRadio.com, well, just click the Play Now button at the bottom of the show story. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy our new on-demand programming.
Hi, everybody. Join me, Nick Desos, Smithsonian Curator, for Preserving Our Past, a lively look at air and space museums across the country. WarbirdRadio.com proudly presents our newest on-demand broadcast, Preserving Our Past, where museum experts share their thoughts and experiences for future generations of air and space museum lovers.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
We've got your six. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
All right, welcome back to the Wix Warbird Weekly Show here on WarbirdRadio.com. We've got another interview here with the crew chief of an A-10, Sergeant John Slade, here at the 47th Fighter Squadron in Barksdale Air Force Base in Shreveport. Really, really fine young man, and I hope you enjoy his interview. Right now. This is Zane Adams with Warbird Radio. I'm on the ramp here in the hangar at Barksdale Air Force Base with John Slade. How are you today, John?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. We're hanging out by a big, ugly airplane, an A-10. You're crew chief on A-10s?
I am.
Okay. You've got, you said you got two airplanes?
I do. It's 160 and 152.
Okay. How long have you been doing this, John?
I've been doing a little over 4 years.
4 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
From DeKalb, Texas.
DeKalb. Oh, you're Texas. A good Texan.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
Good too. Me too. So tell me about, how'd you get here? How did you, tell me about your route to crew chief here.
I graduated high school in 07 and went to college for about a year, and I guess got a little carried away with the college life and decided to take a break. My sister was in the reserves and she talked me into it, and I come out and talked to a lot of guys here, and I've always liked mechanics and stuff like that, so this is what I did. I went to school and here I am.
Okay. Where'd you go to school?
I went to school in DeKalb, Texas. I went to college at Oklahoma State.
Okay. Where'd you go to school for the airplane?
I went to Wichita Falls.
Okay.
For my main base, my main tech school.
Okay.
And then I went to Tucson in Arizona.
Okay.
For hot training.
Okay.
For a month of training there.
It was hot there, I guess.
It was, yeah, it was very warm.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine. Well, tell me about the airplane. What's your main job on the airplane?
I'm crew chief. I do anything. I know everything about it. Basically, you have your family doctor and your specialist.
Sure.
I'm the family doctor.
Okay.
I manage all the servicings, inspections, everything needs to be done to aircraft, engine changes, all that different stuff.
Okay. And how many guys on your crew?
It's just one crew chief. And
just
I have
one crew?
ACC.
Okay.
DCC and ACC.
So you've got, what, the electrician? Tell me about the guys.
The ACCs are crew chiefs as well.
Okay.
If we have a situation come up where we need electricians or guidance or anybody, we just request them, they come out and do their job.
Okay, so you've got you don't have a crew yourself, you've got specialists that,
yes,
they come out that you call on if you got a wheel bearing, you do it. If it's something with electronics or something, you call somebody else. Is
that's
that
it.
Right?
That's okay. It.
All right. And what's your load like? How is it maintaining the airplane? What's your workload?
Well,
on
it's here right now, it's fairly, it can be busy at times because we're short man due to a lot of different situations, but for the most part it's pretty it's a pretty simple aircraft to work on.
Okay.
There's not a whole lot that's very hard to keep up with. I mean, generally, the only thing you do on a normal day is inspections, servicing, and stuff of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the jet that's hard broke, it can take, you know, 2 days to fix it, or it can be longer.
Okay, all right. Say an engine change, you do that all by yourself?
No. You got to have about a crew of five. You got a main supervisor, and you have two guys up top working hoist to hoist the engine down.
Okay.
And then you have two guys on the floor to work straps, get the engine from swaying back and forth, and then an extra person if you need it.
Okay.
But to get one ready to drop, you could do it with two people.
Okay. All right. Do you do any depot level maintenance and that kind of stuff here, or are you just normal flight maintenance?
What do you mean?
How deep into the airplane do you go?
As far as I need to. I mean, we, being a crew chief, we do anything from, say, we get special authorization to change a wing out for any reason, we can change a wing out.
Okay. All right. So you can go down, take the wing box, take the wing out, take the engine off. What about the guns? Is that yours or
is that
somebody else?
The gun belongs to weapons. They, anything that's gun issued or weapons related is all done by our weapons flight.
Okay. All right. You just plug it in then.
That's it.
All right. Weapons they load too?
They load. They do everything. Inspections for their guns. They pull the guns, pull the gun, drums, reload, all the different stuff.
All right. All right. And how many, what do you think maintenance hours per flight hour is, do you think? What do you put in, do you know?
It's hard to say. You could put, it's definitely at least double the time maintenance-wise.
All right. So these guys are out flying today for, dropping bombs out, tearing up mud, and you put in a half a day for those two jets that come back today?
Yeah, sure, to get them ready, you have a couple hours prior to the flight to prep it and get everything ready and released. And then when it comes back from its first go, you have probably an hour, hour and a half of servicing and turning it for the next go. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, you have another 2 to 3 hours to do your final inspections for the day, do all your servicing, and then put it to sleep as far as what's covering it up and stuff of that nature.
Sure, sure. And servicing, what's normal servicing? Just checking oil, checking hydraulic fluids and
right,
those kinds of things?
Every flight of the day, we'll pull an oil sample just to check the engines and make sure that you're not burning anything you're not supposed to. You do refueling. Of course, check all your oil levels. If you need to add oil, we add oil. Okay. Check hydraulic servicing. There's two hydraulic systems that we check. Make sure everything's up to par with them. We have nitrogen servicing for the accumulator bottles. Make sure those are pre-charged and everything correctly. And tires.
Okay.
If need be.
All right. What about recurrent training? What do you have to do yearly, monthly? What do you do?
It really depends. There's always some kind of training we have to go through. As far as a normal launch and recovery training, you don't really have to do all that because you do it.
Now that was Sergeant John Slade, just a 23-year-old out there with, I guess, going not Mach 2 because A-10s don't do that, but going 450 miles an hour with his hair on fire, just an outstanding young man. That if that's the something of the future of America, that's something to look forward to, just young men and women. Out there doing the job, serving their country, serving, doing their duty for you and me. Just can't appreciate them anymore. It was a great day out there with the 47th at Barksdale Air Force Base. Those A-10 squadron, they're slated for maybe realignment or maybe disband the unit. So, if you're in Louisiana and want to write your congressman, they probably would appreciate it. You know, these men and women are doing the job that, like the colonel said, they've got a lot of bang for their buck with the reservists flying the combat mission, and I think it's money well spent in the war on terror there. So they're out doing the job, and I want to say again a thanks to the Public Affairs Office, the 307th Bomb Wing there at Barksdale Air Force Base. They let us we had the run of the place. We have some photographs, so we'll post them on our Facebook page there at facebook.com/Warbird Radio. So if you get up there on our Facebook page, check it out. Maybe even put them some on warbirdradio.com itself. We've got a lot of pictures I took in the hangar, on the ramp, in the crew areas, in the life support areas, in their heritage room, which they can't call a bar anymore, but some really neat stuff. This 47th Fighter Squadron really understands and sees their heritage, their World War II and beyond heritage. They're really proud of it.
You know, they have had a little model with George Welch in a P-40, you know, so he was there at Pearl Harbor, and this squadron's carrying the flag for all those guys that have served in the 47th Fighter Squadron. So, you know, it's a really neat group, and, you know, I hope to be able to go visit with them again. I think I had an invite to maybe go hang out on the range and see the other end of the A-10. That would be a great day as well, and if that happens, I'll be sure to bring you some photographs and some video. But what I've got right now is look there on facebook.com/WarbirdRadio, and hopefully here on the site we'll have some photographs and things up soon so you can see all these fellows we're talking about and see the airplanes as well. That's all I've got for today on this installment, which is number 86 of Warbird Radio Show here on WarbirdRadio.com. Hope you guys have a great day.